KALW.
Until the rain really arrives, if fast winds come in from the east, we're going to see more power outages and possibly more fires caused by anything.
Coming up, the Chronicle's energy reporter has been immersed in PG&E news ever since he took the job.
There are more PG&E stories than I can even do in a day or a week.
We'll hear what those stories are about. Then we hear how yoga brings people together in prison.
Overcoming self-conscious, that's one of the biggest fights we have within ourselves.
Yeah.
It's all about us, right? People are looking at us. People are looking at us. But the thing is, in a room full of people doing down dog, no one's looking at you.
Yeah.
I'm Hannah Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Last month, the Bay Area got a taste of what our new fire season could look like. Big fires and big blackouts. And it's not over yet. Pacific Gas and Electric is now warning that new precautionary power shutoffs could take place later this week for parts of the North Bay. And the utility is in the news almost every day, whether it's shutoffs, bankruptcy proceedings, or proposals for a public takeover. J.D. Morris is the San Francisco Chronicle's energy reporter, and he's been covering these stories nonstop for the past year. KLW's Angela Johnston spoke with Morris at the Chronicle about what he's paying attention to after a particularly busy year.
So you've been covering PG&E for a while now. What are you paying attention to this month post-fires and as we reach the end of this year?
Well, there's a lot going on right now. One big thing, of course, is just kind of the aftermath of the huge power outages that affected millions of people in California last month. Also, the Kincaid Fire, we don't know for sure whether or not it was caused by PG&E. We do know some PG&E equipment malfunctioned right at the time and place where the fire started. There are ongoing regulatory proceedings following up on the blackouts. The California Public Utilities Commission is really trying to crack down and improve PG&E's performance going forward. And of course, a big thing on my mind is, you know, we haven't had any rain. We haven't had sustained rainfall in California since like May. And this is about the time of year when this is exactly the time of year actually when it is supposed to start raining. So I wake up every morning and I check the weather forecast because until the rain really arrives, if fast winds come in from the east, we're going to see more power outages from PG&E and possibly more fires caused by anything. And that really concerns me. And then the last thing is just everything that's going on with the bankruptcy and related to that, this question of what is PG&E going to look like going forward? You've got a bunch of mayors and county officials that are saying they want to turn PG&E into a cooperative, like the credit union kind of thing, a nonprofit owned by the members. You've got the city of San Francisco saying it wants to take over the local wires and substations here in the city and really go for a government-run utility. So there are those kind of structural questions surrounding PG&E, and I want to see how that plays out.
One question that I think's come up for a lot of people is, say a co-op were to take over, say San Francisco were to take over some of the lines and equipment, would that solve a lot of the problems, or would they be faced with a lot of the same problems that PG&E is faced with now?
Short answer is I don't know. I don't think anybody knows. But I do think that it's reasonable to say that changing the ownership does not immediately fix the system. The proponents of public model, co-op model, say that they would have a better incentive to serve their customers better because they don't have shareholders and, you know, really focus on serving their customers more. I think PG&E would disagree with that vehemently. And you're also right. Like, there are still billions and billions of dollars needed to make the electric grid more resilient and able to withstand the kind of weather conditions that we're experiencing that are starting these very dangerous fires, and someone has to pay for that.
What are PG&E's resources to actually do those improvements if at the same time they're going through bankruptcy?
Well, we're still paying them rates, and they're still they are doing a lot of this work right now. I want to be clear about that. This year alone, I think they're spending like upward of $2 billion on like fire prevention stuff to their system. So they're doing a lot of work, and that is funded already.
Do you know if PG&E is experiencing more malfunctions lately, like power lines exploding, and that's why we're seeing more fires? Or has PG&E always had this level of equipment failure, malfunction, and we've never just noticed it before because the environmental conditions weren't right for the malfunctions to turn into fires?
I mean, definitely, yes, climate change is making fires worse. One spark now can cause much more destruction than it did before. But I will say, you know, power line starting fires is not a brand new phenomenon by any stretch. Something that does feel to me like it may be more a newer problem for PG&E, or one that they were not maybe fully prepared for, is their transmission equipment. So in the grid, you have, you know, transmission, which is the big steel towers that it's like the freeways of the system. They carry electricity at high voltages across long distances. And then you have distribution, which is lower voltages, you know, the kind that's bringing power directly into your home. There are a lot more distribution lines than transmission lines. Historically, when utility equipment has caused fires, at least out here, my understanding is that it's been from distribution lines, and that's a vegetation problem. Usually that's a tree branch falling on a power line, or a tree full on, you know, crashing into it in the wind. Or, you know, and I think maybe this is more of a problem down south with like San Diego, but like the wind blowing so fast that it fully knocks down the power line into grass and then a fire starts. With transmission equipment, again, these are big steel tall towers. The vegetation is cleared like very far away from them, and these are really tall structures. So the problem for them is the wind breaking a hook or a cable or something like that, and then the fire starts from there. That was what caused the campfire, and PG&E's fire prevention measures up until that point don't seem to have really taken that possibility into account, at least not enough.
That's San Francisco Chronicle energy reporter J.D. Morris speaking with KALW's energy reporter Angela Johnston. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Henat Baba. Next up, we're bringing you the latest episode of Uncuffed, recorded and produced inside California prisons. This one starts with a word from Uncuffed producer Damon Cook.
The following episode contains some rough language, as well as some references to homophobia, masculinity, and rape. Homophobia is real, and we wanted to give you an unfiltered look at the kinds of conversations that we have. The producers of Uncuffed respect everyone, and it's not our intentions to offend anyone.
Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Drown, and welcome to another episode of Uncuffed, a show recorded and produced inside California prisons. Today, you're with us here at Solano.
My name is Brian Mossa.
My name is Joe Kirk.
I'm BF Tim.
Spoon Jackson.
And the Nomad.
Damon L. Cook.
So today, we're talking about what it takes to relax in this tense setting.
When I first got locked up and I was in the county jail, I was a little bit violent, and they threw me right into solitary confinement. And when I got into solitary confinement, I was stuck in my own thoughts, and I thought something needs to change. So what I did is I reached out through the chaplain, and I started writing a Buddhist monk in a monastery in Stockton. And he started writing me back and teaching me instructions on how to meditate correctly and everything else. And I found myself every day in solitary confinement meditating for about 3-4 hours just to pass time. And it actually, I was in the hole, but I felt better than I'd ever felt in my life.
I actually meditate on Wednesdays. I've been going over to the Buddhist services for a little over a year and a half. And I'm not Buddhist, but the initial reason why I went is because it was raining outside. And I wanted to get out of the rain. So I actually went inside the chapel. And once I went in and I saw what they were doing, and I didn't feel like they were trying to indoctrinate me, I'm like, wait a minute, this meditation is pretty good. Yeah. You know, so so you know what I'm talking about, Miles.
Yeah.
But I started meditating, and then I learned to be mindful, and I'm like, man, I've been living a fucked up life.
So sometimes I'm aloof and I seem like I'm distant, but I'm actually performing a walking meditation. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm familiar with those.
Yeah, so I'm someplace else.
And I do the same thing with my bird watching. I sit out there and watch the hawk. You think it's one hawk, it's two hawks flying around. And I'll be watching them, and people be walking by. I don't even be focusing on them. I'll be watching the sparrows when I feed them, the blackbirds, the rock doves, which is a fancy name for pigeons. And I'll be feeding the rabbits that come up to the fences, and I'll be gone.
I know that some people use yoga. What about anybody in here? Has anybody ever tried yoga?
I use yoga as a therapy, physical therapy. I got shot in 94, and getting shot in the ass is not as funny as it looks like on TV, and my old hip got blown up. So I do a lot of stretches for physical therapy to ease my pain.
I watched it, but I had never done yoga. So I wanted to interview this cat because I thought it was interesting to find someone in prison doing yoga with their ass in the air.
You guys want to hear it?
Yeah, I want to hear it.
All right. This is Yoga, produced by Spoon Jackson.
Gordon Melvin was attracted to a life of dope and drink. He was violent with others and himself. He started watching Priscilla, a yoga guru, on KQED PBS. You'd think that would help, but he was violent with yoga too, practicing it in a violent manner in his cell. I talked to him about how he turned away from violence to become a yoga teacher, leading classes on the yard.
Inhale, stand upwards. Exhale, forward fold. Inhale, halfway lift, hands on shins. Exhale, hands to the floor, stepping all the way back.
It's important to take deep breaths when you do yoga, right?
Absolutely.
So it's important to take deep breaths now, right?
Absolutely. My name is Gordon Alexander Melvin.
Thank you.
And I am Canadian, incarcerated in California.
How long?
23 years right now. Okay.
So how did you get started in doing yoga?
I got started about 2003, where I'd just been involved in another riot, and that was on over here on what used to be called One Yard. It's A Yard now.
Yeah.
So we're locked down again. And I was tired, beat up. My back was messed up. And one time after an alarm on the yard, I had to roll over on my stomach, do a push-up to get up. Mm. I couldn't stand straight up. And somebody told me, oh, you got tight hamstrings. And me being me, I thought, this guy's a nut. Mm-hmm. What's tight hamstrings got to do with a sore back? But I never forgot what he said. And so when I started with Priscilla, I started noticing a little benefit. My back wasn't quite as sore. My hamstrings weren't as tight. I could bend over and touch my shins. Prior to that, I could barely touch my knees. Even though I was using substances, I was still messing around with yoga, and I hurt myself more than I helped myself.
Yeah, so yoga is a powerful exercise, but at the same time, it's tender, and you be gentle to your body as you doing the stretches and stuff. That's what you said?
First precept of yoga is ahimsa, nonviolence. Mm-hmm. I was not practicing nonviolence.
What do you mean?
I was violent with myself and still, you know, using drugs, substances. The way I practiced yoga, I was still involved in fights. I was still got involved in a couple more riots. And then 2006, one morning I was done. I was so disgusted with myself. It was either change or kill myself. Want to do another one? Up. Exhale, forward fold. Inhale, halfway lift. Exhale, those hands down, stepping all the way back, all the way down. And I went back to the hole, another shoe term, and really dedicated myself at that point, because in that dummy cage, that time, I realized that I got no joy out of physical violence anymore.
Yeah.
And the mental violence was draining me.
Yeah, yeah.
So I really got into this, the precepts. It was almost like a monkish existence. When I finally agreed to doing Downward Dog in public, we just did here.
Yeah, yeah.
It was under the TV in the day room.
Under the TV in the day room in a prison.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was quite enlightening.
It was just two of y'all.
At this beginning, yeah.
What kind of looks you were getting?
It was hilarious.
Yeah.
Overcoming self-conscious, that's one of the biggest fights we have within ourselves.
Yeah.
Where it's all about us, right? People are looking at us. People are looking at us. But the thing is, in a room full of people doing Down Dog, no one's looking at you.
Yeah, and being in a prison is even more, you know, everything is 10 times magnified. They see a bunch of guys with the ass in the air. And some guys say, well, that's not kosher. That's not cool. That's not, you know, to have your ass in the air in a prison. But the more enlightened, the more aware people, the more people that take into their growing and becoming a richer human being going to say, well, I'll try it. And then if I get benefits from it, I'll keep doing it.
Kim Young, she was associate warden here at the time.
Yeah.
She was a big time yogi. Started supporting us. And then she put together this cancer walk. I believe it was 2011 or 2012.
Yeah.
And asked us if we'd do it on the yard.
If you would do what?
Perform yoga in the yard.
Yeah.
Run a yoga sequence.
And where does she want you to do this yoga?
We ended up doing it on the handball court. And that was just the coolest experience. 30 guys from all different cliques and gangs.
Yeah, black, white, Mexican.
Everybody, yeah. Doing yoga on the handball court. That
United
day.
Nations all with their ass in there.
And right then I realized that yoga was an equalizer. Everybody was equal.
I want to take yoga. I got somebody I want to teach it to me, but I'm not ready to put my ass in the air yet.
Thumbs to heart center. Inhale, stand upwards. Exhale, forward fold. Inhale, halfway lift, hands on shins. Exhale, hands to the floor, stepping all the way back and coming all the way down. Inhale up into cobra. Exhale down dog.
And that was yoga.
You know, for me, one of the things that was really powerful, I mean, it just was clear to me. This guy admitted to being violent. Yoga started pulling him in a different direction. I guess he was committed to changing his ways and changing his thinking and changing his life.
I learned from guys like Gordon because I won't be that guy that goes out in the yard and gets into riots and fights. And I know how to stay out of trouble. You know, I know how to walk a good path so I can go home on time instead of getting extra years added to my sentence.
Yeah, for me, I never really cared too much what something looks like as far as what I'm doing. Because when I was doing yoga, it wasn't just in the cell. That was like in recent years. Like I said, when I first began doing it, I did it outside in a day room with one of those gray blankets by myself. And then people start coming around, same way his story, just like his. And for me, you really sweat just doing the sun salutation. Between 6 to 12 rounds of the sun salutation, just sweat. It makes you really strong. It does a lot for you.
Well, I went in there a couple times and did the yoga session with Melvin and several other guys, and there's nothing sissified about yoga. You stand in there and you start doing those stretches, you'll find yourself bathed in sweat, looking for the doors, trying to get out of there after about 20 minutes. So it's very difficult to do.
Some of the guys are of the attitude, I'm not going to do that, what they call sissified stuff. And I wasn't one that, for me, yoga wasn't something I chose personally to want to do. And it didn't have anything to do for me with the downward dog poses, any of these other things. It was just a personal choice I made.
I'm still trying to figure out what was spooned to him, because he consistently talked about how he's not going to get his ass in the air.
Well, no, we can get into that.
What? Hey.
It's the fascinating part.
Oh, yeah.
I want to talk about that.
As far as yoga goes, I think yoga is a beautiful thing. And a lot of people practice it, and it's getting more popular all around the world. And I think that for me, Spoon Jackson, no, I will not do ass in the air at this moment. No.
That's all I was asking.
But later on, today even, I might be doing
ass in the air.
As far as it being masculine or feminine, that is not even the question, because everybody on this planet is masculine and feminine, and they come from man and woman, so therefore they got woman and man inside them. It's not a question of being masculine or feminine. It's a question of being ready for something.
Is it a matter of, are you afraid of failure? Are you afraid maybe if you try the yoga, you might fail at it and not be good at it? Is that what it is?
I ain't afraid of anything, but I don't think fear has anything to do with it.
I think in here in prison, it's a certain degree of vulnerability. I don't know how Spoon's mind works, but I think a guy that's been in prison for 40-something years is, you can have a little bit of trust issues. You know, you've seen a lot of people get stabbed, a lot of people get beat up, so maybe putting your ass in the air makes you vulnerable.
No, that don't, for me. The reason I don't put it in the air because it's not appropriate for me to put.
But look, but you got to admit,
all that other stuff that Kirk is talking about.
But you got to admit, one of the first things they tell you when you come to prison, when you're just a little fishy, they tell you, don't drop the soap in the shower. That's the scariest thing in the world, man, thinking, you're going to get jumped out in the shower. So it stems from all of that. It doesn't necessarily mean vulnerability. It's just safety.
That's a stereotype, though.
That's like ever.
It is a stereotype.
That don't happen. A lot of times that don't happen. People don't drop soap and get.
Well, it came from somewhere, Spoons.
If you don't trust your celly, don't sleep on your belly.
That's only on TV, man.
No, wait, one more thing. Believe it or not, I think it is actually a point, the whole vulnerability thing. And mm-hmm. Some people, not necessarily for you, but, for some people, they might have issues with it, with that whole vulnerability thing. I mean, come on, man.
I disagree.
No. But it's hard to disagree with that, Spoon. You could disagree for you.
Yeah.
And I can't dispute
perfect,
that.
Perfect. That's
but generally speaking, come on, man, guys got issues with everything. This man standing behind me in line, I might still, if I was on that page, I might have an issue with him standing too close.
Yeah.
I don't want to be vulnerable like that, and I got issues.
Yeah, but that's personal space issue. That's everywhere, even on the streets.
But it doesn't have to be. There ain't no way in hell you going to let Steve hug you the way he hugs me. I see how you look at us when he gives me a hug.
Steve was a 25 to 50, 60-year-old Swedish woman.
See, there you go again. There you go again. Can you picture him like that?
No.
He's a Shakespearean actor. He's a Shakespearean actor. You put on a wig, you can be anything you want.
I know that Gordon Melvin, what he did was he brought a bunch of people together of different cliques and cultures, and they stood at their own handball court and did yoga.
That excerpt from the show Uncuffed was made by the crew at Solano State Prison: Damon Cook, Steve Drown, Joe Kirk, Spoon Jackson, Brian Mazza, and Brian Thames. Our work in prisons is supported by the California Arts Council and the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. The producers fact-check content to the best of their ability, and all content is approved by an information officer. You can hear more by subscribing to Uncuffed in your favorite podcast player. We'll be right back. And before we leave, let's listen to some local music.
Yesterday was her lucky day. She was calling number 103. She cried at her desk and she screamed in the phone when the DJ said her name.
This is Cindy from San Francisco. They're performing at the Minnesota Street Project this Wednesday.
How would he know that if he only came home, every dollar would be his? Later that night, at a kitchen table, she tried to think of someone to call. Eventually, she finished her drink.
Today's Cross Currents team includes Sona Avakian, Janae Darden, Christopher Agusa, True Quinn, Marissa Ortega Welch, Jessica Placek, Andrew Stelzer, and Eli Wertschafter. Our engineers are James Rowlands, Tariq Foda, and Gabe Graben. Content manager is Shireen Adil. Our managing editor is David Boyer. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.
But what? He wasn't sure.